All right.
We'll try it again. After Moses' death, he speaks to Joshua. He's got a new leader of the people. Tells him to get up and cross over the Jordan. Everywhere you walk will be your land that God has promised to Abraham, to Isaac. And then he gives the details of where this land would be located, from the Euphrates, the land of the Hittites, to the Great Sea on the western side. No one's going to be able to stand against you. That was the promise that God made to them. And we know this is true. They'd already fought two nations. Who were they? All right, the Amorites and the Moabites. Actually, the Og, king of Bashan. Yeah. Sihon, the other one that they had already fought and won. Tell Joshua, as I was with Moses, I'll be with you. Don't be afraid, but be courageous. I'm with you and in everything you do. And he's trying to encourage Joshua at this particular point to let him know that everything he does, if he follows him, that he would be with him. You'll lead the people to inherit this land of Canaan. Why did Moses not get to? Okay? He didn't follow God's command completely. Exactly right. And he should have. But he goes on to tell Joshua, you must do everything that I command you. And had Moses done that, then he would have gone into the land as well. He tells him to do not turn to the right hand or to the left from following the law. We get anything from that today? Can't. We turn to the right or the left and following God's law today, we have the same problem. We will not be followers of Him. So that's what he was told then. So we've got to walk that straight and narrow way. Just what God says. Don't deviate to the right or to the left. Either way. It tells him that you will succeed if you're guided by what is written in the law. We find that in the first chapter in verse 8. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, then thou shalt have good success. Alright, this is going to be the land that Israel will be able to have. This is on the western side of the Jordan. And this is what they're going to be taking. This is the land that they have already taken on the east side of Jordan. This is going to be the side on the west. You'll notice Simeon is located right down here, and you'll see as time goes by that this will be, you might say, just dissolved into Judah. Judah will become all of this area down here as time goes by. We'll get into that as we go further. Joshua prepares to go over the Jordan. It's flood stage. Which meant that it could be as much as 12 feet deep in places. Now you think, well, that's not all that bad, 12 feet, you know. But it's a little more than you can jump up and get a breath. But it's very swift current as well. And I'm going to show you a picture of that in just a few minutes. Joshua believed God could take them across the Jordan. He didn't have any question about it. And so we learn that the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh were reminded at this time that they had promised to fight for the land of Canaan. They were to go over and help them fight before they would return back to their home on the eastern side of the Jordan River. These tribes had chosen the east side. They had been granted this by Moses. Do you remember the circumstances when they first said something about they wanted to have that land over there? What was Moses' first reaction? What? Yeah, he didn't think they wanted to go across and fight for the land of Canaan. And he was very upset with them when they first said, oh no, we'll go and fight. We just want our possession over here. And so they finally agreed for that. They were not to return until the task was complete. We find that in Numbers, the 32nd chapter, where they actually stayed there until then. The armed warriors answered and said, we agreed to all that you say. We will follow you as we followed Moses. We'll do exactly as you commanded. whoever rebels against you, they're going to die. He won't put up with it either, Joshua. So, and of course, this is the particular land that Reuben, Simeon, Reuben, Gad, and half tribe Manasseh wanted as their land. As we move on, the two spies were sent to Jericho. Of course, they had to get across this water, and you can understand how two men who were very able warriors could possibly get across this water, more so than cattle and the little children and the women and those kind of things could get across the Jordan to go over to Jericho to spy it out. You can kind of understand that a little bit better. They were hidden by Rahab and protected from the king's soldiers. We find that in chapter 2 and verse 4. And the woman took the two men and hid them and said, "Thus there came men unto me, but I wist not whence they were." She didn't know where they was from, at least she said that. Why do you suppose this particular house was selected? You ever thought about that? You don't know, okay? All right, give us your idea. It's a good thought. Okay? That's a good thought. Okay? That was the providence of God, as you might want to say. I think there's one thing we can think about as well. They would not as likely to be, even though they were noticed, pardon me, they would not as necessarily be noticed with this type of lady who was a harlot. Many people may come in to see her. Okay? From other countries might come into the city. We don't know that for certain, but we know that she was a harlot. And they would not necessarily maybe notice them going to her as much as they would if they went to someone else's home more so. I don't know. That's just a thought that I had as well. But she knew that God had given the land of Canaan to them. She was very aware of what had taken place in chapter 2 and verse 9. Tells us that she knew that God had given them this land. And it reads, "And she said unto the men, I know that the Lord hath given you the land, and that your territory is fallen upon us, your terror is fallen upon us, I'm sorry, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you." People were just faint because of what they saw them coming. Everyone in Jericho was afraid because of what they had heard the Lord had done for Israel. Do you know what they had heard up to this point? What had God done for Israel up to this point? Sihon and Og had been defeated, and the Red Sea had been dried up, and they crossed over on dry land. These people knew that. How long ago was this? 40 years beforehand. You realize what an impact that made on those people in Jericho for them to have remembered this 40 years. Now, if the Tennessee River dried up, would we remember that for 40 years? We probably would, you know. That's right. That's right. And it liked to dry it up, didn't it? It went way down at that time. Right. That's exactly right. I remember Harville talking about going out and staking him a lot of fishing places during that time. Okay. They knew the Red Sea drying up, and also of Sihon and Og, and there was no courage left in these people in the city of Jericho. They were just faint. They just didn't. Weak-kneed, you call it today, you know, just shaking in your boots, you might say. They knew that he was Rahab did, so he knew that he is the God of heaven and of earth. And so, "You be kind to me," she said, "and I'll be kind to you. You take care of me, and I'll take care of you. And swear to me that you'll save me and my family." That was one thing that she wanted, and they agreed to do that. Spies promised her life for theirs. And that's in the second chapter, verse 14. The men answered her, "Our life for yours, if ye utter not this our business. And it shall be when the Lord hath given us the land that we will deal kindly and truly with you." They would take care of her if she took care of them during this particular time. Rahab helped the spies to escape from Jericho by letting them down the wall with a scarlet cord. She lived on the wall itself and had a window evidently going through the wall. And so she let them down through that wall with a scarlet cord and told them to flee to the mountains. Wait for 3 days. The scarlet cord was one of the things that she was required to have hanging out the window when they came back to take the city. Sure, this scarlet cord is hanging out. Everybody's in the house. Exactly right. Hey, all of your family, and if anybody sets foot out, we're not responsible for them. So they had to stay in the house when they came to take Jericho. The soldiers will be weary looking for you after the 3 days, Rahab told them, and then you can return back to your camp. And this is exactly what took place. They stayed in the mountains for 3 days. Soldiers all came back because they figured they had gone down towards the Jordan to get across back to the camp. But they didn't. They had gone up into the mountains. And so it worked out just as Rahab said it would. They returned to the camp back across Jordan and reported what they had found to Joshua. The spies said, "Truly, Jehovah has delivered the land into our hands." What a difference it is with this report and ones that they had gotten at Kadesh Barnea. Those men said, "We can't take it. Those men look like giants and we look like grasshoppers." But here, these two spies says, "Jehovah has given it into our hands." So that's a drastic change from what it was when they were at Kadesh Barnea. Joshua prepares for the crossing by sending the officers throughout the camp to tell them that it's time to go over Jordan. And that's found in chapter 3, verse 2 and 3. "Came to pass after 3 days that the officers went through the host, and they commanded the people, saying, 'When you see the ark of the covenant of your Lord, your God, and the priests and Levites bearing it, then you shall remove from your place and go after it.'" And that was the process that is letting the people know that it's about time to cross over. Early the next morning, Joshua led the Israelites closer to the Jordan and stayed 3 days before they crossed over the river. The area across the Jordan from Jericho was a plain that extended about 6.5 miles eastward. Now think of the Jordan River right in here is about where they crossed. And this plain evidently sticks out in this particular area right here about 6.5 miles. Where if you think about how many people are going to be involved here that's going to be crossing, they're going to need just about that much space to cross over or to be prepared to cross over. But this is what lies ahead of them. You'd like to cross that little spot. That's the Jordan River at flood stage. And you can see, even though there's some rocks and boulders, you can see what a tremendous force is rushing down through here. And this is probably not as much a flood stage as it was then, evidently. But this is one time when it was at flood stage that I was able to find on the internet. I'm sure that was not as much as it was back then. But in some areas of this, I'm sure that it would just sweep you right off your feet if you tried to go across it. So you can see what they saw ahead of them and, you know, how they felt, you know, as they were traveling down. Of course, they had to stay back a ways. And this is the Araba, the valley beginning where the Jordan Valley widens out just north of the Dead Sea, stretching down to the Red Sea. So there were some sort of flat lands in that particular region where they actually were going to be crossing. Priests were to lead the way to the Jordan carrying the Ark of the Covenant, and the people were told to stay back about 3,000 feet, roughly a half a mile or so from where the priests were, because they had not been that way before, is the reason that it's given. God told Joshua Today Israel will know that I am with you and I was with Moses. You're going to see how God was going to be with him, and look at verse 7 of chapter 3. The Lord said unto Joshua, this day will I begin to magnify thee in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that I was with Moses, so will I be with thee. And I'm sure that was of great comfort to Joshua at this particular time. Priests were told to go to the Jordan, and when they get to the brink, to stand still in it. And that's in 3 and verse 15, as they bore the ark of the covenant before the people, and they came to the brink of the water. They stepped in. That's when the waters began to go back. Joshua addressed the Israelites and said, hereby you will know that God is among you. He will drive out your enemies. Priests' feet rest in the water. The water shall be cut off and stand in one heap. This is exactly what happened. And when they moved down to the Jordan, the waters began to pile up and backed up all the way to the city of Adam. Where is Adam? Well, best I can find out, about halfway in between the Dead Sea and Galilee, Adam. And so this all backed up, and you can see how it would get widened out down here. Now this was real steep terrain on either side. Mountains just go right up, you might say, down to the Jordan in this particular region in here. And so it would get narrower the further up you go. But it was not accessible to go across because they were just steep mountains on each side. It's rock bluffs almost straight up. So that's a artist rendition, mine. What it might be. All right. Waters before them flowed on down to the Dead Sea. The wall on their right hand side, and everything just went on down to the Dead Sea down below them. Amazing feat to see that, I'm sure. And we see that in chapter 3 and verse 16. How that the waters which came down stood and rose up into a heap very far from the city of Adam, and this died Zaratan, and those that came down toward the sea and the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off. The people passed over right against Jericho. Israelites crossed over. The soldiers from Reuben, Gad, and half-tribe Manasseh also crossed over. About 40,000 men from those tribes who were armed soldiers went over with them at this particular time. Priests stood on the dry ground until Israel passed over. Chapter 3, verse 17. Instructions was to take some stones. For what reason? Who remembers? Memorial. Okay. Each tribe was to take a stone as they crossed over, and they were also to stack some up in the middle of the Jordan as well. Those they take over was taken for a reason. Memorial for later generations. What were they to tell the later generations? The kids asked, what's these rocks for? What were they to tell them?
Rick?
That's right. And if they would do this, and their generation would tell the next generation and so forth, they would not forget how God had carried them across the Jordan River. The fathers were to tell the children, and then they were to tell their children how God had done this. Priests stepped out of the riverbed. The waters returned as they were before. We find that in chapter 4 and verse 18. Joshua was made great in the eyes of Israel by the hand of God, and the people revered him as they had Moses all the days of his life. On the 10th day of the first month, Israel came out of the Jordan. They encamped at Gilgal. Joshua set up the 12 stones and they had brought from the Jordan as a memorial, as God had commanded. And he explained how God had dried up the Jordan would be what they were to tell their children. People of Canaan were afraid, very afraid, when they saw them coming across. And now we're going to see what's going to happen. Israel encamped at Gilgal, was just across the Jordan River. Joshua commanded that all the males born in the wilderness be circumcised. God and wanted them to do this. On the 14th day of the month, at evening, they kept the Passover. One thing that I have wondered about with this right here, and I don't know the answer, and maybe some of you do. What about all the males who were still on the east side of Jordan that had stayed there to guard the cities, the other lands? I don't know. I wondered about that. It's just thought that crossed my mind, whether they circumcised at this particular time or whether that happened later. I don't know. And there's no account of them being there during this Passover time either. So that's just thought. But on the 14th day, which is 4 days after this, the evening they kept the Passover, and this would be the second Passover, right? 40 years since the first one. Where was the first one held? Egypt. Okay, very good. On the day after the Passover, Israel ate the produce of the land, and where that particular spot was they got the produce, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. But we do know that they did. The scripture tells us that, and the manna ceased. God did not provide for them after this particular time. The years of wandering in the wilderness were over now. 40 years of it. So where is this Gilgal? Well, the Gilgal that they're talking about was somewhere in this region, just above the Dead Sea, somewhere in this area right here. Jericho is real close by. Don't do that, Tom. But anyway, this is the particular area where they're at. There's also another Gilgal that we'll study a little bit about, and that's a possibility. Put it that way. We don't know for certain, but we do know this. In 2 Kings, the 2nd chapter, verses 1 and 2, it says, "And it came to pass when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord has sent me to Bethel. And Elisha said unto him, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they went down to Bethel." Here's Bethel. This was the Gilgal that was talking about. They would have had to gone up to go to Bethel. Eastward of Jericho. Well, okay. It nails it down then, doesn't it? Anyway, that's a thought to look at anyway. Bob mentions this other area as a Gilgal as well. Okay. A person would go through Jericho to enter into the land. You might say the central area of the country. That was kind of the border city, if you want to put it that way. Jericho was the path that led, that Israel was going to follow going into the land. It had to be removed so Israel could move forward. Joshua looked toward the city of Jericho, and there stood a man with a sword drawn. And the man, Joshua asked the man, "Are you on our side or the enemy's?" Look at 5, verse 13. Read 13 through 15. Brent, you want to read that for us? All right, so we find that very similar situation for Joshua as it was with Moses. The man replied neither. He wasn't for or against. He said, "I am come as the prince of the Lord's army." And so Joshua stretched himself on the ground, face turned down, and worshipped him. So we do know that this was some person who was of authority, a Godhead figure. "What message do my Lord have for this servant?" Told him to put his shoes off. People of Jericho were afraid. Instructions were given and procedures were given to take Jericho. We learned a little bit. We do know this much about this particular person, and that was it was not just an angel. So who is this prince? Notice that Joshua fell on his face, similar to what Moses did in Exodus, the 3rd chapter, verse 5 and 6, at the burning bush. Text actually calls him Jehovah, chapter 6 and verse 2. not just an angel, because an angels, we know, do not accept worship. We find that in Revelation, the 19th chapter, verse 10. They do not accept worship from men. So, the mound of Jericho, I'd say the city, kind of up on a hill type, it covered about 7 acres. And if you have 7 acres in mind, how much area that is, I found out that the area where the Bible school sits up here is 9 acres. It's a little tract of land right up here. And so that would be like 2 acres more than the entire city of Jericho. It doesn't seem like a very large place when you think about that, does it? That from the front of the school down to 31, that entire, you might say, block area there is about 9 acres. So it gives you an idea of how big this city was. Of course, we know that this was just the part that was enclosed by the walls, and the fields that they farmed were all outside the walls. They would go out and farm the fields and then come back in for safety in case of at nights and of course in case of wars or anything like that. They would come back into the cities. Safety. The walls were built from great stones. You've seen many of these in pictures, I'm sure. Many of the cities were built very similar to this. There were several ways that you could enter into these cities that were walled, and here's a few of them. You could dig under the wall. That is, if you could miss the arrows as they were being shot from the top of the wall down at you, you know, you could might get to dig a little while and the next guy have to take over because you were laying there dead. But you could also soak the foundation. They didn't have a great foundation a lot of times. They were just stones stacked on the ground. And so if you got enough water there, then the foundation would begin to crumble. When the foundation crumbles, the rest of it would crumble. And you could also use a ladder to go over it. And you say, man, they had ladders back then. Yeah, they had ladders back then. Show you some more, even. They had ramps. They would build a ramp out of rocks and grass, dirt and stuff, all the way to the top of the walls a lot of times. And then they could run up the ramps and get to the top of the walls. Of course, you'd have to be fighting all this time, but, you know, that was one way that happened as well. They also had battering rams, knock the gates down, that kind of thing. So they used that kind of thing. Grappling hooks, throw it over and then climb up the rope. These were ways known to have get over the walls. They had towers on wheels that they used to smash the gates and the top of the walls down. Getting interesting, isn't it? But none of these had to be used by the Israelites because all they needed was faith in God. Amazing, isn't it? All they needed was faith. God said, you do what I say, the walls will come down. Here's a few shots from some reliefs that I have on my Bible program. And this is a type of shield. The men behind it with bows and arrows would shoot at the guys up on top of the wall. This is that on wheels. See it right here? Got wheels on it. And they would actually make a ramp, run up it, and then this would knock over the top of the wall or knock the gates down, one or the other. And that's on a relief that's chiseled in stone, you know, that they have found. So it tells us that these kind of things, you know, they weren't just primitive people as a lot of people think sometimes. They were very smart people. This is where they tried to dig under the wall, where they were digging under the wall and getting the rocks to fall and those kind of things. Just to show you some of those things. As labeled with the ladder where they tried to go over. So there's several ways that we know from not only those reliefs, but from history, that the ways that they were able to tear down the walls from different cities. But these Israelites didn't have to worry about that at all. God was going to take care of them. Joshua calls the priest, tells them the instructions, and the warriors also, and this is found in chapter 6 and verse 6, tells priests and said to them, take up the Ark of the Covenant and let 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horn before the Ark of the Lord. Then he said to the said to the people, pass on and compass the city, and him that is armed, pass on, pass on before the ark. And some went before the ark, some went after the ark, who were warriors. And so the priest took the horns, the men of war go before the priest. They go around once each day for 6 days. And during this particular time, there's not a sound made except the horns were blown. And that's found in 6:13. They blew the horn as they marched around. Everything in the city of Jericho was to be dedicated to the Lord. This was going to be like the first fruits of the land. God wanted it all for himself. That's what he was telling them, that everything in the city would be dedicated to him. The brass, the silver, gold, and all things that were in it were to be kept for God and to be put into the treasury of God. First fruits of the land, all the people and animals were to be killed except for Rahab and her family. Everything else was to be burnt and destroyed completely. This is very similar to a burnt sacrifice. When they sacrificed a burnt offering, it was completely and totally burned. Nobody ate anything of it. That's similar to what this city would be to God. Whoever took anything would be cursed. Israel would be cursed as well if anybody took anything. The instructions were followed. The battle took place. Only Rahab and her family were saved. She later lives with Israel and marries Salmon, the son of Nashon, the prince of Judah. And she was also the mother of Boaz, married Ruth. And we'll learn about that as time goes by. She's also the great-great-grandmother of King David. Joshua places a curse on the rebuilding of Jericho. When the foundation is laid, the builder's firstborn would die. And the gates, when he set the gates up, then the youngest son would die. And this actually happened, we find, in 1 Kings, the 16th chapter. Tells of this fulfillment of this particular prophecy. They had conquered cities on the east side, Jordan. Jericho was the first in the land. God told Joshua the same thing was to be done to Ai, except that the spoils, when they were able to keep the spoils from Ai when they get there. The spoils of war could make one very, very wealthy. Because the gold and the silver and the brass and all the robes and garments and stuff were very, very expensive, many of them. And we'll study some about that as time goes by. The term devoted means that everything was holy to be dedicated to God. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Yes, sir. Okay. How many Israelites were there? Something over a million above women and children. 600, yeah, something thousand. So we don't know the exact number, but it would be somewhere million or million and a half. It was a real undertaking to do this. Yeah. Comment, anybody? Okay. Thank you all so much.